It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Authorities are still trying to figure out the motive in this case, but as you mentioned, law enforcement officials say the 28-year-old suspect Floyd Corkins walked into the Family Research Council's building yesterday morning. He was confronted by a security guard, and law enforcement officials say the alleged suspect allegedly made comments saying he was against the policies of the FRC. Now, we don't know specifically what comments the suspect made, but we do know that the FRC, as you mentioned, is a conservative Christian policy organization which has been vocal against same-sex marriage. And authorities say that's when the altercation broke out and the suspect allegedly shot the guard in the arm. And of course, police are saying that is when police responded, and the guard is being hailed as a hero for allegedly wrestling the suspect to the ground.
Security guard in this case is a hero as far as I'm concerned. He did not allow the armed person past the front, so he did his job.
And still this morning, you can see the blood spatter inside the lobby here at the FRC building, and we know that Corkins, the suspect, is being charged with assault with a deadly weapon.
Sandy Rios with you. That certainly takes us back in time, doesn't it? That was a CNN report from August of 2012, and that's the day that Floyd Corkins entered the building at Family Research Council and shot the security guard. We didn't know why Floyd Corkins did that until he was interviewed by the police, and this is what he said.
Now, how did you, this building, this organization, how did you find it? Did you, like, look it up online, or how did you know about it?
They, Southern Poverty Law lists anti-gay groups, and I found them online.
Okay.
A little bit of research on their website and stuff like that.
Okay.
Floyd Corkins, in being interrogated, said, I researched it online. The Southern Poverty Law Center lists anti-gay groups. I researched it online. And that was the reason Floyd Corkins gave for targeting FRC. He targeted two other organizations on that day. And honestly, I think this is the first time that the American public really got a glimpse into an organization that many of us have known for a long time is a nemesis to many of us who are conservatives in many, many different ways. They have developed a hate list which not only includes Family Research Council, but also the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the Center for Security Policy, that's Frank Gaffney's organization, the Center for Immigration Reform, that's Mark Kerkorian's organization, James Kennedy Ministries. There's a very long list. And most of them are immigrant organizations, anti-illegal immigrant organizations. Most of them are traditional family organizations. One of them is, in fact, the top of the list is the American Family Association. And this hate list then was in turn used by news media, used by the Pentagon, used by the FBI, used by all kinds of organizations, governmental authorities, to target those of us placed on this list. It got so bad for American Family Association that trainees in the U.S. military were being told, we had videos of them being told that the American Family Association was a hate group. They should not give to them. They should be suspicious. We were like a kind of a cloud over us as though we might be domestic terrorists. And of course, we know what happened to the Family Research Council. And I will just speak personally about one thing. I personally was placed on a list of women against Islam. That's what they called it. There were 12 of us. It was Michelle Malkin. It was Judge Jeanine Pirro and several other people whose names you would recognize. And remember that this was during the time when we were seeing American people targeted by Islamists, some of them beheaded, killed, shot, stabbed, all of this happening on our soil. So they printed our pictures, or they did cartoon renderings, very, very like etches of our likenesses, which were very real, and put not our personal addresses, but our geographic location. It was a very dangerous publication, the Women Against Islam. This is what the SPLC, in part, was doing. And so this week, the SPLC, or last week, made incredible news because one of its founders was fired. And before I say anything more about that, I want to introduce our guest, because his name is Scott Walter. Scott is the president of the Capital Research Center. Scott served with George W. Bush in the White House as his special assistant to the president for domestic policy. He was a senior fellow at Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. He graduated from Georgetown. I could say a lot more about Scott, but he is just a wealth, an encyclopedia of information, and he joins us to discuss the SPLC this morning. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Sandy. Great to be here.
You know, Capital Research Center is very familiar to me, Scott, but it would be really helpful. I think it's more of an inside the beltway, people that are have their nose to the grindstone on issues. I think you're a resource for some of us, but explain to my listeners what it is that you guys do.
Sure. Our job is to investigate the left deeply and expose it widely. So we focus on really connecting the dots on the left's activists and radical groups and their donors and their histories. And probably the single best introduction to us is our new website, influencewatch.org. It has thousands of entries on donors and activists and groups, their financial histories, their funding, their criminal histories often. Whatever you need to know about the left, you should be able to find it at InfluenceWatch.
Yes, so, and we'll be mentioning that again, by the way. But let's move right into this, because, you know, Scott, I'm sure then that you have been tracking the SPLC for a number of years, as I have. So I should really just turn to you to talk about one of the... initially, they were known as a group that fought, the Ku Klux Klan, that fought for civil rights in the South. But what do we know about their foundings besides that?
Well, you're right. They were founded in 1970, and the three folks who were the most important were Morris Dees, who was both a lawyer and a direct marketing expert. He's the one who just got fired, as you pointed out. Another lawyer, Joseph Levin, and then the activist Julian Bond, most famous for later becoming the head of the NAACP. And at the because they were lawyers, the first thing they did was provide free legal services for folks on death row, and they also sued to desegregate the Alabama Highway Patrol. And then in 79, they shifted and began suing violent white supremacist groups like the Aryan Nation and the Ku Klux Klan. They really were awful groups. But the problem, which often happens with charities, is they've basically fulfilled their mission. By the end of the 80s, their lawsuits had bankrupt those white supremacist groups, and there were hardly any folks left to fight against, but they still had lots of money because Morris Dees, that fired co-founder, is, give him credit, an absolute genius at extricating money from liberals. So they had a huge war chest, and they'd accomplished the mission that they'd raised it for, so they had to poke around and figure out some other things. So they decided, because, of course, they'd all moved far to the left by that point, they decided, oh, well, we're going to target right-wing extremists. And I should add that this change was so drastic in what they were supposed to, from what they were supposed to be doing, that the entire legal staff resigned in 1986 because they knew it was a crock. And of course, it's now, as you've pointed out, just expanded broader and broader so that anybody, you know, anybody to the right of a CNN news anchor at this point is liable to be called a member of a hate group, and they cover immigrant rights and prison reform and LGBT stuff they're especially obsessed with. And guess what? They're now one of the richest charities in the nation. They have assets over $500 million, about a third of that, by the way, stuck in offshore accounts. So they're good capitalists on the sly.
You know, it's interesting because I'm sure you read the New Yorker article that was written by Bob Moser, who was with the SPLC for a number of years as a writer. He has a lot of damning things to say since the firing of Morris Deeds. But I would just want to read this for a second. He talks about Morris Deeds' prodigious ability to raise money. And as I understand it, Scott, Morris Deeds way back in the day was a direct marketer and actually sold cakes or pastries or something, or Fuller Brush, you name it, he sold it.
Yeah, he was a slick salesman, and that was his great gift, and he just happened to stumble into politics. But, you know, the connection there, to show you the left-wing connections, where he really got his start in junk mail was in the 1972 campaign of the very far-left George McGovern, and he brought his expertise to the McGovern campaign in exchange for being able to walk off with McGovern's list after the campaign, of course, had a disastrous defeat because McGovern was such a radical. But that was the lodestone that got him started, and off of which he built his direct mail fundraising empire.
You know, as it seems to me that when the shooting at FRC happened, they were talking about them having like $120 million in offshore accounts. And now, honestly, that's changed. As you've talked about, Scott, they have undergone a glut of income. I think especially some attribute it to the situation in Charlottesville, Virginia, where, you know, the story is, of course, that white supremacists were marching and the good guys came marching in. And so as a result of that, they got a glut of income, didn't they?
That's correct. Charlottesville was a great thing for them. And frankly, the Trump presidency has been a great thing for virtually all the groups on the left, because the standard left-wing base is easily hysterical, as we've just been discovering on the Russian collusion hysteria as well.
Yeah, I think they, and so now they're up to $500,000, as you, half a billion, what am I talking about? $500 million in their offshore accounts. And I want to read going back to Bob Moser here. He cites a Southern journalist who said, his name was John Egerton, he said that Deeds, the center's longtime mastermind, was a super salesman and a master fundraiser who viewed civil rights work mainly as a marketing tool for bilking gullible Northern liberals. "We just run our business like a business," Deeds told Egerton. "Whether you're selling cakes or causes, it's all the same." And so that's kind of the ideology, the lack of it, behind what was done in the guise of something high-minded. And it would be interesting, Scott, for us to, I mentioned briefly some of the groups that and people that have been targeted, but there are other people, like there was this black professor from Vanderbilt, remember?
I do. I've met her. Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, tell the story. I interviewed her also, but I want you to tell that story if you don't mind.
Well, you probably know the story better, but here she is. You know, her real crime was simple. She's a black conservative, and we all know how important it is to take those folks down, because they just destroy the left's narrative on race. So they were looking for anything they could do to get her. And as I recall, what they claimed was that she had endorsed some racist video, when in fact she had no idea what they were actually talking about. Am I getting it right, Sandy?
Yes. And it's Carol Swain. Yes, and Sue, and it's Scott. She actually was a supporter of the SPLC. She really wanted to support them, and she went to one of their meetings, and when she actually heard what they were talking about, she was shocked because she thought it was that they were defending civil rights for black people, especially in the South. And she found that it was all about gay issues of the LGBT issues, and she was offended by that because she was a Christian. So she came back and wrote a long article exposing them, and that was when she came into their crosshairs, and they went after her with a vengeance. My guest is Scott Walter, and of course he's the president of the Capital Research Center. Scott, by the way, would recommend, and we do too, influencewatch.org. That's their wealth of information. We have just barely tapped the surface of what they know about the SPLC, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
there are dangerous hate groups in America. Who will warn us about them? The media have an answer.
The Southern Poverty Law Center.
The Southern Poverty Law Center.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, based in that building in Alabama, calls itself the premier group monitoring hate groups. Looking at their map of such groups, you'd think America was consumed by hate. I once believed in the center's mission. Well-meaning people still do. Apple just gave them $1 million. But what donors don't know is that today the center smears people who don't deserve to be smeared.
The presence of radical Islam.
This woman grew up in Somalia, suffered female genital mutilation. So now she speaks out against radical Islam. For that, the center put her on its list.
Multiculturalism failed these communities.
This man was once an Islamic extremist, but then he decided radical Islam was wrong, and now he criticizes the radicals. The center labels him an anti-Muslim extremist, too. The center's leaders, Richard Cohen and Morris Dees, would not talk to me. So commentator Nomiki Kant stepped up to defend them.
They have a history, a long history of fighting against extremists like the KKK.
History, yes, but they labeled skeptical Muslims like Ayaan Hirsi Ali as haters.
If you have a horrible experience with religion, that's one thing. It's another thing to use those experiences as ammunition against others who are practicing their religion peacefully.
But they're just speaking, criticizing it.
Of course she has the right to free speech, as does the Southern Poverty Law Center has a right to push back.
The Southern Poverty Law Center now lists people like Ben Carson, Laura Ingraham, and Jeannie Pirro as extremists. But it doesn't list Antifa, the hate group that beats up people on the right. The center's become a hate group itself. It's now a left-wing, money-grabbing slander machine.
That was John Stossel reporting on that, and that's not a new report. That was 2017. So, and yet the SPLC has continued to operate unfettered. Their wings have been clipped a little bit, and we'll talk about that with Scott Walter, again, who's the president of Capital Research Center. Scott, I know that there was a lot of news about the SPLC after the shooting by Floyd Corkin, and then John did his report, and there was a great piece that came out in the Weekly Standard. Expose it called the King of Fear Mongers. And so, in what ways, from your perspective, were they sort of stymied at least a little bit?
Well, the frustrating thing is that the SPLC has simply done a spectacular job of two things. One, as we've already discussed, they just fleece gullible liberals left, right, and center, and that's why they've got that $500 million sitting in their bank account. But the other thing that they do spectacularly well is leverage their dishonest hate group list all over the place. So they leverage it for fundraising from places that really ought to know better, like Apple, which has given them a fortune, and George Clooney's foundation has given them a fortune. And Apple even put a donate button for SPLC in its iTunes store. I bet they haven't done that for American Family Association, have they?
I don't think so.
So they do that, but then, as I said, they work their way into things. So they have gotten, for instance, this happened a year ago, and I'm proud to say we were one of the groups that had a victory in this. We got this reversed, but GuideStar, which is one of the big charity rating and reporting entities out there. GuideStar.org has, you know, hundreds of thousands of charities. You can look up their financials and this and that. SPLC went to them and got GuideStar to put hate group labels on things like Family Research Council and AFA and Center for Security Policy and the rest. Now, there's a big stink over that, and GuideStar pulled back and changed its mind, but lots of other places have been doing cooperating in that same sort of way. For instance, Google News, the Google News Lab and ProPublica is a left-wing, yet another left-wing activist group, they came together to form a coalition called Documenting Hate, which was going to have a hate news index, a database of hate crime news stories and things. And Univision signed on to that, and the New York Times, and BuzzFeed, and some other fine places, The Advocate, Gay Magazine, and all, University of Miami School of Communications, and others. So they work to enmesh, SPLC works to enmesh itself throughout the fabric of things. Now, there's a really awful campaign that was launched just a few days before the big explosion here where Morris Dees was fired in disgrace. But it could be really dangerous, and that is, it is a campaign to try to get the large donor-advised fund providers like Fidelity Charitable Gift Fund and Vanguard's Gift Fund and Schwab's. Some of your listeners, I'm sure, use this. You know, you have a brokerage account for your retirement, say, at Fidelity or Vanguard, and they offer to set up a donor-advised fund for you, which is sort of like a savings account for charity, and you put money there, and then you ask the Vanguard or Fidelity folks, okay, I want to make my annual donation to the American Family Association or the Capital Research Center. And the SPLC is trying to get those places to say, oh, well, I'm sorry, we can't give money to the AFA or FRC because those are hate groups, according to the SPLC. And given that Fidelity Charitable Gift Fund is, at this point, America's largest charity of all, that would be a really wicked thing to do, to try to strangle the funding of conservative groups.
Well, have they succeeded, or are you, this is just something they're in the process of trying to do?
Luckily, it's only been a couple of weeks, and they, as I say, they launched the campaign just a few days before the the blow up with Morris Dees. So, with luck, it won't get that too far. On the other hand, we all know business leader, I'm afraid, is an oxymoron. I don't particularly trust the squishes at Fidelity and Vanguard and Schwab to do the right thing.
And this is the problem, Scott, the new problem for those of us that are conservative, is this economic warfare, which is because the left, well, they're having pretty good luck actually in Congress, at least they have been, but they still have trouble passing these horrible things that they want. So now the effort of the left is to sort of force their way on us through the financial institutions, and certainly we've been seeing that through corporate boycotts and the kinds of things they've been trying to do to conservatives who are in media. But this is a different way. This is different. This is exactly as you explained it. In fact, we just need to repeat. This is targeting conservatives, conservative organizations, and no doubt it will be conservative individuals. They've been targeting them. I'm not talking about the SPLC now. I'm talking about the left more broadly. Targeting like gun shops and gun owners and threatening banks if they give them loans. Can you say something about that?
Yes, no, you're quite right. It's just a devastating all-out effort to, people are more familiar with the deplatforming, where they try to force universities and other places not to allow conservative voices to be heard, but they don't even want you to be able to talk to each other, conservatives to be able to talk to each other. They want to bankrupt every sort of conservative thing that they can find. They want to stop the businesses that are related to conservative issues, like, as you say, the gun owners or the gun shops and the rest. And the Obama administration was working hard on this as well, because we tend to forget this, but there are just a small handful of places where almost all monies flow through. How many times do you use cash anymore for anything, right? You go online, you order stuff with your credit card. Even if you're getting a cup of coffee, you use your credit card. Well, there are very few credit card processing companies. And again, they can be real cowards in the face of the left's ugly brigades.
You sent an article that I saw published by an organization or an outlet called Sludge, and here's the headline: America's biggest Christian charity funnels tens of millions to hate groups. Now that is connected to the SPLC. So what's that all about?
Well, this is related to the trying to stop Fidelity, a charitable, and Vanguard and Schwab's donor advised funds. In this case, they're referring to a Christian donor advised fund provider called the National Christian Foundation. And again, the way it works is just like the Fidelity Charitable. You donate your money to them. They are legally a charity. You donate money to them, and they set it aside as a special account for you that can only be used to for giving to charities. And but because, of course, lots of center-right Christians have put money there to because actually it's a very fine organization. By the way, they specialize in helping people with family businesses. You know, a lot of conservative Christians have family businesses, and it becomes tricky when you want to pass those along to the next generation. It's not an easy thing to do, so National Christian Foundation is especially good at that. But the folks you were just saying there at Sludge, which is a left-wing website, they want to vilify the National Christian Foundation and make it so that they aren't able, you know, it would be ideal if they could keep them from giving money to conservative groups. But really, I think that the true target there is not National Christian. It's the big commercial donor-advised fund providers like Vanguard, Schwab, and Fidelity.
I want to read the byline on this because it's. I just want to imprint this on people's minds. The National Christian Foundation passed along $56 million from anonymous individuals to nearly two dozen anti-LGBT and anti-Muslim hate groups over the last 3 years on record. So that's the direction they're going with this particular article. You also point out that there is a, now I don't know what Amalgamated Bank, I don't really know anything about that, but they have started what's called the Hate Is Not Charitable campaign. Who are they and how powerful are they?
Well, luckily they're not especially powerful, but they fall into the thoroughly wicked category. They are a union-owned bank. And again, if you go to influencewatch.org, you can get all kinds of info on the SPLC, but also on Amalgamated. They are controlled by an arm of the SEIU, which is the most powerful and influential labor union in America, arguably. It's either that or the teachers' unions. And the SEIU is the biggest institutional political donor in the country and has been for more than a quarter century. They were crucial to Bill de Blasio becoming mayor of New York. They were crucial to Barack Obama becoming president. And in fact, the president of the SEIU at the time, Andy Stern, you may remember, he visited the White House more often than any other outside leader in Obama's first term because they knew they would need his help for getting a second term. So it's their bank that has signed on to this, which, by the way, also shows you that this is just left-wing activism. This is, you know, the SEIU doesn't particularly care one way or the other about race stuff or anything like that. It just, like Morris Dees, it just cares about money and power.
You know, Scott, when we when I talk to you and we talk with some of our other friends, we talk about the connections of some of these organizations to other leftist organizations, but generally it's like funders, like, oh yeah, they're funded by George Soros, they're funded by Tom Steyer, they're funded by, you know, we do those connections. But this time, the SPLC, you know, doesn't need funding. And so what are their leftist connections? Do you guys track that? And what do we know about that?
We do. If you go to influencewatch.org and look up SPLC, you'll see their 12 biggest contributors, institutional contributors, that is, from 2000 to 2015. Now, ironically, you have on there the Vanguard and Schwab and Fidelity charitable funds, which is to say people are hiding their gifts, as it were, to the SPLC using those vehicles. But you also see the Picower Foundation, which isn't well known but is a significant donor to far-left causes. You'll see Cisco Systems Foundation. So Cisco, of course, is the big tech firm, sadly. And you'll see the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Kellogg is probably the single biggest funder of the structural racism nonsense that is a big part of identity politics in the country.
But Scott, I don't get this. Now, okay, the SPLC has $500 million in an offshore account, or that's their resources with the offshore account. Why would people be giving them money at all?
Well, that is an excellent question, and I want to quote from that wonderful New Yorker article. The other thing your listeners should do is it's not behind a paywall. You can find it. If you look up Morris Dees, D-E-E-S, and The New Yorker, you will find it. My favorite line in the whole thing, I believe, is, "We were part of the con, and we knew it." So this is something that I intend to be asking GuideStar, which, remember, was willing to use the SPLC's hate labels until we all fought against it. I want to say, look, that place had hundreds of employees currently and hundreds more former employees, and any one of them could have told you this is a con job. And by the way, you know, we should add, it is not just conservatives who've been criticizing the SPLC for decades. There are plenty of serious left-wing folks who are also appalled at the venality and the total lack of ineffectiveness for what it's supposedly doing involved. So it is just outrageous that a place like GuideStar or that Google would pay any attention to this wretched operation.
The article that Scott's mentioning is The Reckoning of Morris Deeds and the Southern Poverty Law Center, written by Bob Moser, former employee. It's printed in The New Yorker. We'll make it available on our Facebook page. Scott Walter is our guest with Capital Research Center. Be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Over the last 30 years, the Southern Poverty Law Center has become a powerful force in American politics. It has a lot of power, and it gets it by systematically slandering the political enemies of the left. Oppose their agenda on immigration, practice conventional Christianity, believe in the biological difference between the sexes, host a show like this one. And you can expect the SPLC to brand you as an extremist, a hate group, an enemy of humanity. They've gotten rich doing it, by the way. They've got an endowment of more than $500 million. But even as it called all of its political enemies evil, the SPLC was, and you will not be surprised to hear this, apparently operating on a very different standard within their own offices. Today, the group abruptly announced the firing of its founder, Morris Deeds. The group has not revealed what exactly Deeds did. Its statement implies behavior was severe and widespread. The SPL says that not only has it fired Deeds, it will be bringing an outside organization in to review the work environment of the entire group. Josh Moon, who's a reporter in Alabama, who's reported on this, cites an internal SPLC email and says that Deeds was fired for a mix of sexual harassment, and again, buckle your seatbelt for this one, racial bias. Despite calling the group the Southern Poverty Law Center, there was nothing impoverished at all about Morris Deeds' own lifestyle. He lived very well, probably better than anyone else in the state of Alabama. He was 82. He was the SPLC's highest paid employee, and he lived in a luxurious place on a couple of hundred acres. He got rich by frightening grandmothers, sending him direct mail, and hurting his political opponents. That pays well. This evening, Deeds spoke with a local reporter and denied all wrongdoing. That's not surprising. Deeds has set himself up over 30 years as the arbiter of good and bad. He believes the right thing, so he is by definition a good person. You disagree with him, and you are by definition evil.
That was, of course, Tucker Carlson. He's talking about the firing of Morris Deeds, one of the founders of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is the topic of our discussion. And let me just add, in this New Yorker piece that we mentioned earlier, and it's going to be on our Facebook page, the author says this: in the days since the stunning dismissal of Morris Deeds, the co-founder of the SPLC, I've been thinking about the jokes my SPLC colleagues and I used to tell to keep ourselves sane. Walking to lunch past the center's Maya Lin designed memorial to civil rights martyrs, we cast a glance at the inscription from Martin Luther King Jr. etched into the black marble, until justice rolls down like waters, and intone in our deepest voices, until justice rolls down like dollars. The Law Center had a way of turning idealists into cynics. And then he goes on to talk about the first surprise he had was the office itself. He talks about how grand it is. He said they called it the Darth Vader building. He's talked about what a cold place, how much security, and most of the employees were black, except for the executives, who were almost all white. One of the co-workers said to him, "Well, honey, welcome to Poverty Palace. I can guarantee, I can't say that word, I can on the radio, I can guarantee you that you will never step foot in a more contradictory place as long as you live." And that's just a little taste of that article. My guest is Scott Walter of a Capital Research Center. They follow the Southern Poverty Law Center and all the movements of the left, and you can certainly track what they're tracking at Influence Watch.org. Okay, so let's talk about what's happened. We just mentioned that Morris Deeds had been fired, but that's not the only shakeup. My understanding is that they had a black, the highest ranking black female had resigned. Do you know anything about that, Scott?
Yes, that was what triggered this final explosion. Their highest ranking African American at the place, a lady attorney, she resigned, and within hours, I believe it was, there were 20 staffers willing, brave enough to put their names on a letter saying that the place was a mess and needed to be profoundly changed, and the leadership needed to be removed. And very shortly after that, they yanked the rug out from under their top fundraiser, Morris Deeds. That was done by the president, Richard Cohen. And then it wasn't long, only a day or two, before Richard Cohen himself resigned, because people were, there was yet another letter written saying, you know, that Deeds isn't enough. It isn't just Deeds. So Cohen, the president, resigns. And then a day or so after that, one of their other top lawyers, a white woman, also resigned. And that New Yorker article is just devastating about how ugly things were in that workplace. And, you know, Sandy, I think we should think about this for a second, that, you know, we wonder how can the left imagine that America is just this horrific hotbed of racism and sexism and bigotry and abuse. And, you know, part of the answer is there America is. You know, it is not uncommon to see this sort of thing in left-wing groups. You know, I think of Harvey Weinstein, you know, going to a Planned Parenthood fundraiser and then sexually assaulting his, you know, somebody in his office and the very next day. I mean, this is the way they operate, and I think a lot of it is because, you know, we Christians know self-righteousness is the most dangerous sin. And if you think you're incredibly righteous, well, you may give yourself a lot of license to misbehave.
That's true. And that you remind me, when I talk about racism, I said recently when I was discussing it on the air, Scott, that honestly, in my personal life, this has not always been true, because some of my family members, extended family members, were racists, and I was raised in, I remember white and colored fountains and all of that. So I certainly saw racism, and I've experienced it. But in my adult life now, I don't know any, my friends are not racists. I don't hear this. And I made that statement on the air, and some, a leftist who listens to me all the time, challenged me. I can't believe you would say that. I can't, you know, so in other words, I'm lying. That couldn't possibly be true. My friends are, you know, closet racists, and I must be hearing, you know, racial jokes. I'm just not being honest about it. So that reminds me of what you're saying, Scott. Maybe in the world of the left, there is, I think there probably is a lot of racism. Otherwise, why would they single out black Americans as though they can't, they treat them as though they can't function without their great help and charitable support. And that's, of course, what did George Bush call that? The soft bigotry of low expectations or something like that.
No, exactly. And I'll give you a perfect example of that, because I still remember this so vividly, even though it was about 1984, I guess. My senior year in college, just by the luck of the draw, my roommate was a black kid from New York. And he and I went down to the local deli to get beers for the weekend once, and a professor who knew him said hello, and then just condescend, you know, he obviously thought he was being wonderful to my roommate, and it was so grotesquely condescending that my hands were turned into fists and white-knuckled with rage that anyone would be so condescending and disgusting, you know, to my roommate. And but that guy, boy, he thought he was just so wonderful. He was so nice to this little black kid. It was unbelievable to me. I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's actually what they think. They think that everybody does that, that they put on a face and are really friendly and nice to people of color, but behind their backs feel superior. And I'm just saying that's not the way conservatives operate. That may be the way some do. But genuine people don't do that. We have really come a long way with racism. But anyway, that's, I think that that's, you've got a very good point about the SPLC then viewing America as this place teeming with racism and white supremacists, you know, which honestly, the stats show there is like, what, a few thousand actual white supremacists left in the U.S., something like that?
Yeah, living in trailers with holes in the roof. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, really, it's a very small amount, and yet they've made, and every year, by the way, too, Scott, they increase their number of organizations on their hate list, and it's been found that some of those don't even exist, never existed. So it has been a fraud for a very long time. So all these people now have resigned, and they are announcing that they're going to bring in a third-party objective persons to come in and clean the place up. So what do we know about that?
Well, that's a pretty amusing story. I mean, it's all sort of grim, but you know, you have to laugh. They have announced that they are going to bring in Tina Chen. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. She had various jobs in the Obama administration and ended up as chief of staff to First Lady Michelle Obama. Now, the irony is that she was recently in the news just a week or so ago because she is in Chicago, where she is a friend of Mayor Rahm Emanuel's wife, and she was she's also friends with Jussie Smollett, the black gay man who's now been arrested for the atrocious hoax that he perpetrated on himself, pretending to be the victim of hate crimes. And anyway, the police there, as we know, were doing a very thorough investigation and exposed exactly what really happened, which was that it was all a hoax he'd planned out in advance. But while the investigation was going on, Ms. Tina Chen called the Cook County State's Attorney to pressure the state's attorney to go after the head of the police for the town and try to get him, who was doing such a thorough investigation, to hand the investigation over to the FBI. So, in other words, she's friends with the Smollett family, who, by the way, are rabid leftists. Angela Davis, the multiple Communist Party candidate in presidential elections, was one of the best friends of Jussie Smollett's mother, so that's where Jussie got his left-wing hysteria. But anyway, so this woman who's friends with this Marxist family that perpetrates hoaxes and was trying to help them escape the police investigation is now going to go do a thorough investigation herself of the climate at the Southern Poverty Law Center. So I think we can guess whether that's going to be a thorough investigation or not.
You know, I didn't know any of this other than her name. That somehow that piece of news escaped me, Scott. But I do remember reading that Jussie Smollett's sisters had campaigned for Barack Obama, and that there is a videotape of Jussie singing and Michelle Obama standing behind him, and then she comes forward and ends up singing and dancing with him. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't. Yeah, it sounds highly entertaining.
Yeah, so very interesting connection. So now she's going to go clean up the Southern Poverty Law Center. Honestly, how could an organization, what is the legal authority? If justice were really done, and if things were the way they should be, what should happen to an organization like this?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, one thing that could conceivably be done is to have an investigation of by the IRS of whether it has been a legitimate charitable operation or whether it has been attempting to be political in a way that would intervene in elections. Now, that's a high bar to meet, so they probably couldn't be shown that that wasn't the case. Although, if things were reversed, if this were a prominent right-wing organization and there were a Democrat in the White House, I wouldn't be surprised if the IRS were turned loose on it. That has happened before. The Clintons went after the Heritage Foundation, for instance, back in the 90s there. But I think the proper thing, though, is that the America's great civil society should do its job. That is to say, the press should expose this so thoroughly that nobody who gets one of those wonderful Morris D's direct mail solicitations to add to his $500 million bounty would ever give money again. And people would be too ashamed to serve on the board of it. And by the way, that's definitely something that needs to be investigated. All those board members for year after year turning a blind eye to all of this. I mean, for God's sakes, the racial stuff goes back to the 90s, at least. I mean, with the Montgomery newspaper, Montgomery, Alabama newspaper, which is no right-wing outlet, had a whole series of stories on this back in the 90s. So what are all these decades of board members doing, not resigning or demanding changes?
Well, maybe change is underfoot, Scott. Maybe justice is coming in many, many ways in our country. That's at least what I'm seeing glimpses of, and it is, I have to say, it's very encouraging. If you would like to track the left, there is no better place to do it by going to influencewatch.org. That's what Capital Research Center does, and I've been working with them for years, honestly. And I just can't say enough about the quality of their research. So, Scott Walter, thank you so much for so much of your time today. We appreciate it. And now all of you know a little bit more about the SPLC. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talks.